On this week's 51%, we visit the home of longtime feminist activist Muriel Fox to chat about how the National Organization for Women got its start in the 1960s and how it fought for many of the rights and opportunities we cherish today.
It's so important. I feel more important than ever now that people understand you can make a difference.
We also hear from North Adams, Massachusetts City Councilor Ashley Shade about what it's like being a transgender woman in politics right now. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on. I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh Alita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Today we wrap our series on Women's History Month by revisiting a guest we last spoke with in August. Muriel Fox is a longtime feminist activist, former public relations executive, and one of the almost 50 founders of the National Organization for Women, which launched in 1966. Now was and remains a major force in advocating for gender equality and women's rights. In the 60s, they focused heavily on the workplace, as women were still held back from many companies and fields. Fox served as the organization's publicist and was President Betty Friedan's main lieutenant in its early years. Her feminist career highlights include starting the New York chapter of NOW, leading the NOW board, and even pushing Sesame Street, one of her clients at her day job, to allow more female characters on its show.
Hello. Look who's here. This is Muriel.
Fox is now 97 years old and is still pushing for women's rights from her retirement community, Kendall on Hudson, in New York's Westchester County. I stopped by the Kendall recently to say hello, and she was fresh off a trip to a NOW meeting in New York City. She says the second wave of the feminist movement from the 1960s to roughly the 1980s is a time she never wants people to forget. A few years ago, she set out to write a memoir about her time in NOW called The Women's Revolution, How We Changed Your Life. And among the artwork and awards that adorn her apartment is a framed version of the book's cover, blown up for everyone to see.
At the age of 94, I just got kind of mad. First of all, I was mad about losing abortion rights and the ERA didn't look too good at that time. But also, I was mad because today's educated young women, so many of them, had never heard of Betty Friedan. And I believe that Betty Friedan should be revered as a historical figure right there with Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, because she really was the one who really liberated half the world's population, women. And so in 1 year, I wrote this book because I had all my files, all the information. And what I did is I just listed the chapters and then put the pieces of paper in the correct chapter, and the book really wrote itself.
You highlight not only Betty Friedan, but a lot of other people who were instrumental in the movement,
right,
too.
Right. There are 29 women and one man who history should not forget. Every one of them changed the world. And it's so important. I feel more important than ever now that in today's political climate that people understand you can make a difference. It's not easy. It takes a struggle, and you make mistakes. But at the same time, we did change the world. And despite the problems today, the world's never going to go back to the way it was in 1966 when NOW was founded. At that time, the newspaper ads said, help wanted male, help wanted female. Women were only 4% of America's lawyers, only 7% of America's doctors, and 1% of America's judges. And it was just considered routine that a woman really lived only to raise a family and to support her husband and children, and that this would give her great satisfaction. Then Betty Friedan wrote the book, The Feminine Mystique, which proved to women all over the world, 50 million bought her book, that you can have another life also. It's all part of life to accomplish, to realize what you want to do, what you can do. and to be a partner with men. We're not opponents, never were opponents of men. We've always been partners, and equal partnership has worked out for everybody, for our sons and our grandsons, as well as our daughters and granddaughters. Mm-hmm.
You helped co-found the National Organization for Women, right?
I'm very proud of that.
How did it actually come together back then? You know, what was the work of putting this organization together?
Well, there was a conference in June in Washington of the state commissions on the status of women, and a group of women got together in Betty Friedan's hotel room, and they had certain requirements. They said if they did not meet those requirements, they were going to start an organization. And they did. And then that summer, I was one of many people who was on Betty Friedan's Rolodex and received a form letter saying they'd started this organization. And I immediately wrote her and said, give me 200 application blanks. I'll send them to all my friends in American Women in Radio and Television. And she asked me, I was a vice president of the world's largest public relations agency, Carl Byron Associates. She asked me if I would do the public relations. I said, well, I have a job that's about 60 hours a week. I have two children, but I'll do what I can. And so I did help with the public relations. And then on October 29, 1966, really, the women's revolution began with the founding of NOW. And from that moment on, newspapers across the world put it on their front pages the fact that we had started a militant new organization. And we were serious. And the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was not being enforced in regard to sex discrimination, and we were going to make sure that the government enforced the Civil Rights Act for women. And everything changed, and we had task forces. We listed everything that we needed, that we wanted, especially jobs. Jobs was number one, but also the image of women and health care. Every facet of life, and it really began to change very, very quickly. We couldn't believe how quickly it changed, and I think that's because it was so long overdue. And we were part of the civil rights movement, which was moving for equality for everyone.
You know, what did this work of making this change happen look like? What do we need to make change, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. You know, what worked for you guys, at least back then?
As I say in the final words of my book, the word now is politics. Politics, politics, politics. We've got to be elected. Every time someone comes up to me now and says they like my book, I say, good, run for office. Whether it's a local county chief or school board or a library board or the state legislature. We've got to get feminists, women and men who believe in equality, we have to get them elected. That's the answer. I did a lot of research for my book, and I realized, frankly, we had a Democratic Congress, Senate and House of Representatives. I'm not sure we could have succeeded so easily if we had not succeeded in politics.
Tell me about some of the people that you've decided to highlight in this book. Are there a few that you would like to spotlight for us?
Well, of course, I really want to spotlight Betty Friedan because people must know about her, and she lived right here in this area in the Hudson. She she wrote The Feminine Mystique in Grandview on Hudson, which is Rockland County, right across the river from here. And she was very active in Rockland County activities. She was an impossible person, very hard to get along with, very hostile. At one point when I was interviewed after her death, I said, well, maybe it takes a hostile person to make a revolution. But my book is called The Women's Revolution, and Betty was our general, as difficult as she was. And then people always ask me, well, who was the one man? And his name was Phineas Indritz. And he was sort of little short, roly-poly lawyer. But he helped us get the Pregnancy Discrimination Act passed. He also worked for Martha Griffith, who was a congresswoman who was very important in helping us get the Help Wanted ads changed. Martha Griffith said a lot of very pithy things that are quoted, and I think some of those might have been from Phineas Indritz.
Even when this started, you were in a position where you were a vice president of a PR agency.
Right.
How did you get to where you were, considering what the times were like at then?
Well, when I first applied to Carl Bayer in 1950, and I had a good contact there, he was executive vice president, and he said, well, you're very impressive, but we don't hire women. So I went away and took another job. But then someone told me about an opening in the radio and television department. It was mostly radio in those days. I got that job. The head of that department was a wonderful man who believed in equality and merit. So that's how I started. Then each step of the way, I got promotion that really scared me because there was no man in the agency at all. In fact, in our department, when my boss became head of all the departments, they made me head of radio and television, and I couldn't believe it, and most people couldn't believe it. There was a man there who was making a lot more money than I was, but he used to go home on the 5 o'clock train from Grand Central, and I stayed and worked in the office, and that was recognized. But I remember that the president of the agency said to me shortly after, well, Muriel, you've come a long way. We'll see if you've come too far. So this happened every step of the way. Then when I was made a vice president, the CEO said, well, Muriel, we love you, but you've gone as far as you can go because CEOs of corporations can't relate to a woman. So it really took the women's movement and some law enforcement each step of the way before we could prove that women could do it. And then once we got results, we proved that we could do it, and we moved ahead. And then we needed affirmative action. There had been affirmative action for white men for thousands of years, and we did need affirmative action, and so this was one of the laws that I helped to get enforced for women.
Did you always know that you wanted to work in public relations or that you wanted to work on these types of issues?
I wanted to be a journalist like you. but at that time, the newspapers were folding and there were not as many radio outlets as there are today. So I got into public relations because that's all there was at that time. But I'm very proud. I helped introduce Sesame Street, which is one of my accomplishments. And I'm very proud that I wrote the press release for the founding of NOW and our lawsuits. The press release is telling about our lawsuits. And incidentally, one of our biggest lawsuits against AT&T, the CEO of AT&T, Charlie Brown, at a dinner several years later, said losing that lawsuit to NOW was the best thing that ever happened to AT&T because it opened the movement for all those talented women and it made the company a stronger company.
I wanted to ask also, when you look back, because I think of where my grandmother was and the kind of life that she led, and I think of the kind of life that my mom led and like some of the things that I'm doing now. And it's really cool to sort of see that progression. I just finished my master's degree and I'm the first person on either side of my family to get my master's. I'm certainly the first woman. I'm just wondering if you also have those kinds of thoughts when you look back on what your grandmother did, what your mother did, and where you are.
Very, very much. As a matter of fact, my mother was mentally ill, and I think her problem was that she was just in the wrong job because most of the world at that time, women were just housewives. She hated housework. She hated cleaning. Frankly, she really did not like taking care of children. And Gloria Steinem's mother was mentally ill. And Catherine East, one of our other heroes, her mother was mentally ill. And Gloria is absolutely sure that if her mother had lived today and could have continued her newspaper career, that her mother would have been healthier. So I feel very fortunate that I have had that opportunity, and I'm very grateful that I lived in a world where women fought for it. Women and men fought for this change.
What did you make of the November election and sort of where we are right now?
I have to say I never expected it. I was so sure we would win. And I think a lot of the problem, unfortunately, is my field, communications. People are not getting the news today. People used to listen to the news on the radio at 6 o'clock, and then maybe watch it on television, get the daily newspaper. I ask people today, how do you get your news? And they get it almost indirectly, scattershot, from social media or from podcasts. But they're also getting a lot of lies. And this upsets me so much. And I don't know the answer completely. How do we make sure people get the news, that people get the truth? And we have to work for this. And this is a job for you young people now to work on. How can we make sure people get accurate, correct information?
We've got, you know, people turning things around on affirmative action. We've got, you know, attacks now on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And what advice do you have for people, maybe for people trying to push against these things?
I think we need allies. We have to work together. And frankly, our own feminist movement would have gotten even further if we hadn't had so many fights. We fought terribly. And everybody, I think we succeeded because it almost seemed like a religious crusade for us. But in a religion, you always believe that nobody else is as pure as you are. So we fought with each other over our differences. And we have to understand together now, we don't have to agree on everything, but we have to have allies. We have to have coalitions. And we have to work together. And if we do, we'll succeed. And if we don't, I don't know what's going to happen to the world. I'm very worried today.
So obviously this conversation is part of our coverage for Women's History Month. How do you hope people look back on the National Organization for Women and in that particular period of the second wave of the feminist movement?
Well, I hope people will understand we changed history, but it could be done. People used to say to us, well, that's the way it's always been. But it doesn't have to remain that way. We did change history. And I'm very proud Women's History Month has made a big difference. Also in helping people to understand what you can do. And I hope my book is helping young people, especially young people, understand they can make a difference. I'm very pleased at Kendall how many people come up to me and say, well, I read the book and I loved it and I want 3 copies for my grandchildren or my nieces or my nephews so that they will understand what we went through. People don't believe that the ads used to say help wanted male, help wanted female, or that women were denied credit cards. Yeah. Or women couldn't get a mortgage without a man signing for it. People today can't understand. Really? Was that true? We had a fight for that. But we won. So I hope people will understand you can win if you fight, but you have to work together. And I think today, more than ever, we need our coalitions. We need our allies. And now is still strong. I just did a book party at NOW headquarters in New York City last week. Young, and I was happy to see so many young people there and so many men. They were enthusiastic, and they weren't giving up. They're angry. And frankly, I think we lost the election because our opponents were angry. And maybe they were angrier than we were. Maybe we were too confident. But whatever it is, we have to turn that anger into fighting productively together.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Muriel Fox is one of the nearly 50 co-founders of the National Organization for Women and the author of The Women's Revolution, How We Changed Your Life. It's out now through New Village Press. The first months of the second Trump term have delivered on one of the Republicans' major campaign promises, a harsh crackdown on the civil rights and recognition of transgender Americans. Among the torrent of executive orders issued by President Trump so far are a number of policies directly aimed at the transgender community, including moving transgender women into men's prisons, banning transgender people from military service, and halting gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth. Now, legal challenges have left many of the orders in limbo, and just before we recorded today's episode, actually, a judge blocked that order banning transgender troops from the military. But the Trump administration's intentions are clear enough. In 2021, Ashley Shade made history in Western Massachusetts when she won a seat on the North Adams City Council as the first openly transgender elected official in the region. Since then, Shade has become the body's vice president. She spoke with WAMC's Josh Landes about what it's like being a transgender woman in politics right now.
It's a stressful time to be different in this country. The actions being taken, you know, through executive order are incompetent and, quite frankly, discriminatory. It's hard to be a person right now when your government declares you not to exist and is trying to erase the history of people like you. So it's a really difficult time, not only for me, but anyone who is trans in the Berkshires. We're all kind of reeling with every action that gets taken.
Are there any particular actions that stand out to you for either their cruelty or singularity that we've seen so far?
I mean, honestly, I think all of it's cruel. Banning people from serving in the military who have honorably served and have been part of the military for years and saying they can no longer serve their country, that's very cruel. The fact of trying to define what gender is and what biological sex is when they don't even have the correct biology behind it is also quite disturbing. The administration has gone through and erased many pages through different government websites relating to LGBTQ people and trans people specifically. They were ordered to put that back up. And on the pages that they put that back up, they put out a warning saying, we disagree that these people even exist. So it's quite a challenging time.
Now, as far as the behavior of folks towards you as a trans person, you know, I know that, you know, in the past we've talked about that discrimination is nothing new to you in a lot of ways. But have you seen, you know, has there been an uptick in sort of bad behavior or, you know, deliberately provocative or trolling behavior towards you over the last few months?
Definitely in the online spaces, yes. The internet, trolls on the internet love to troll. And, you know, there's people that definitely feel more emboldened to say some terrible things. And, you know, I've publicly made some posts about that and shared that. And my kind of motto on that is every time that they share hate to me, I'm going to ask people to donate for my reelection campaign. So if they want to try to flood my inbox with insults and derogatory statements, I'm going to go to my supporters and ask them to help me, you know, continue to fight against this kind of behavior.
What do you think needs to happen on the local or even state level to ensure that the trans community is protected here in either Berkshire County or Massachusetts writ large?
Yeah, I think there's several actions we need to take. Massachusetts, luckily, you know, we passed a constitutional amendment protecting people based on sexual orientation and gender identity many years ago, and that still is in place. But we still have a long way to go in enforcement of discriminatory policies. You know, it's going to take a big effort from both school boards and the state on protecting children in schools with the federal mandates that are coming down. Though with them eliminating the Department of Education, the feds aren't really going to have much of a say in education going forward, it looks like. So we'll see what that looks like. But also, you know, the city of Worcester just made themselves a sanctuary city towards trans people. And I think that's an action that more cities can take to publicly declare that they are a safe place, and that that their government employees should not comply with any executive orders from the federal government, should not comply with other states trying to indict people for providing services or care.
As you look ahead, you know, what are your feelings about this era to come that's just ahead of us? Are you really concerned about the direction the country's going in around when gay acceptance and trans acceptance? And, you know, as you say, anyone who sort of falls out of what seems like a relatively tight parameter, do you feel like this is going to intensify? Or are you hoping that this is sort of like a particularly ugly moment that might change in the future? What's your optimism or pessimism like looking ahead?
Well, I always try to look towards positive things. And the positive thing is that a lot of people are gathering together and coming together to fight back, but it is going to get worse before it gets better. You have the newly confirmed health secretary saying people on certain antidepressants and certain stimulant medications should be sent to farms to weed off their medications and learn how to be healthy. You have a president that's reopening Guantanamo Bay to turn it into a detention camp for migrants and immigrants. These are highly concerning things that I don't see stopping anytime soon. And honestly, the real fight now is to slow down the progress of any kind of action, discriminatory behavior that's being taken at that level, while also preparing to hopefully that the incumbent party loses enough seats in 2 years that they won't have the power to control Congress anymore. And we need to turn out and show out and take Congress back from this administration because, the president does not have unlimited power and authorities. Our Constitution was made to make sure that the president had checks and balances. And many of the actions that are being taken are things that need to be done through the legislative body, not from the executive branch or an executive order. So, from a legal standpoint, a lot of these executive orders are being challenged, which is great. But with the clearing out of the Justice Department and the FBI and the CIA, who's actually going to, even if the courts say, yeah, this is unconstitutional, the bodies aren't there to enforce that it's unconstitutional and do something about it. And unfortunately, with Congress being where it is right now, Congress also won't act to rein in the president. So that's a really scary situation, and the courts can only hold for so long. So really, the only option we have is to get the right people in office in 2 years, win back Congress, and take action through the legislative branch.
Councillor Shade, is there anything about this I've not thought to ask you that you want to make sure people understand as a part of this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that recently happened here in Massachusetts is a person who had applied for a passport change in Massachusetts had their documents sent back to them, and their documents were essentially destroyed. And so sending in government documents is risky right now. It's a risk that could be taken with, honestly, don't do it as an individual. Use an organization, use resources, and use attorneys and different LGBTQ organizations to help you if you're going to pursue those routes. Don't try to do everything on your own. Don't try to be alone in this fight. There's a lot of us. There's more of us than they realize. The trans population is 1% of the population in the United States, but we are right now considered the enemy by our federal government. And that's a scary proposition, a government with unlimited resources and a military that is trying to do basically whatever they want right now. So it's really important that we come together, that we use the resources that are available. There are a lot of organizations out there like the ACLU, like the Trevor Project, like the Mass Equality, the Massachusetts Trans Political Coalition. There are many organizations out there willing and ready to help people fight these battles. And again, I can't stress enough the importance of safety.
That was North Adams, Massachusetts City Councilor Ashley Shade speaking with WAMC's Josh Landis. Thanks to you for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King, 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night and down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool.